My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So fast to freedom.
Back to Open the Voice Gate for February 5th, 2026. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or in our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. Click the red box that sponsors podcasting. It's a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts, it's your old pal, Mike Spears, and escaping Orlando by the skin of his teeth, dealing with winter weather, we have Case Lowe returning to the program. Case, what have you learned in your time inside the Sunshine State?
Oh, I want to thank the lovely people of Universal Orlando Resort for treating me so well while I was there, and I want to thank the fine people at United Airlines for getting me back to Chicago after being in Orlando for a few days. And I was promised it was the Sunshine State. It was quite cold when I was there. I was very disappointed by the climate, but nevertheless, I am back and I am happy to be here alongside you. I have not listened to your solo audio yet because in the past week, I feel like I have missed about 9,000 podcasts that I need to catch up on. I don't know what happened, but I have become completely overwhelmed by the amount of audio, wrestling related and otherwise, that I need to listen to. So you're in the pile, but Mike, I gotta be honest, I did not get to you.
Hey, I mean, I put out a new theorem about how we evaluate rookies, and I've got some feedback on it. It's still something I'm kind of working on, but as soon as you get that done, I want to loop you in on this, because this is something that I'm going to be working on in the background for the next few months. But no, I feel like the week that you kind of have been gone, like, in a lot of ways, I feel like I should be giving you like a wrestling news pop quiz right now to see just how much you just got fallen behind. Like, did you hear Hiromu's leaving?
Yeah, I feel like I'm up to date on news. It's just that, like, Alan's got a bunch of shows I've got to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
I've got now we're doing two flagships a week. I haven't heard the first flagship this week. I'm going to be behind on the second one this week. There's NBA trade deadline stuff I want to listen to. There's big picture stuff that I want to listen to. There's the podcast Bandsplain, who had the skateboarder Jerry Sue on last week, and I'm halfway through that, but then I got distracted with something else. It's the amount of stuff that we have to consume, or I guess that we get to consume, or that we feel like we have to consume. I don't know what the proper term is there, but it is one of those weeks where it feels a little bit overwhelming. So I'm woefully behind on all things Lucha. Luckily, I'm caught up on AEW. I'm seeking out Ganbare Pro as we speak, and I am caught up on Dragon Gate, which I'm happy to say.
Hey, I got to a point during my part of the Ice Storm that I was really getting into the Puro Archive channel, like the real deep, dark indie stuff.
Oh, like, the great YouTube channel, Puro Archive, which has everything we've talked about on those days, Michinoku Pro-wise. That channel has all of that stuff uploaded, and then it has a bunch of really, really weird, really slimy Japanese indie stuff on it. If anybody,
which just scratches my itch, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really does.
If anybody knows the guy that runs that account, again, it's just Puro Archive on YouTube. If anybody knows that guy, please let me know, because he is the one who for a very long time was the source of pretty much all of the Hamada's Universal footage that we had. And so I don't know who that is, but I would like to be in contact with him, because he seems like a guy that I should know. But I don't know who is behind that account.
Yeah, and I need to get in contact with them, because I need to figure out why in like 1999 there were like knockoff Shiryus doing backyard indie shows.
Well, I think that was, I mean, that's deeply 1999. I think that was happening in America and Japan. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, no, I've consumed my fair share of pro wrestling, Kageki and Eagle over the last week, but I'm glad to get back here to talk about the big week we had in Dragon Gate case, because Memorial Gate was on Sunday. We'll be touching a little bit on that, but really, and part of the reason why we're coming to you at this time in the week, we are fresh off the heels of the Truth Gate show from a Corcoran Hall on today, actually, February 5th. And one of the more eventful shows, I feel like, especially on the road to Unos Dos Tres. And it feels like that coming out of Cork in today, Kays, the overall picture in Fukuoka at the end of the month is becoming a lot more clear. And especially as it relates to the title situations and by and large, what is going on with Gacha Dokuro and Shimizu.
We certainly have a clearer picture of what Uno Dos Tres is going to look like. We have a Dream Gate match. We have a Triangle Gate match. It looks like we have an All-Asia tag match. And it seems like we have some sort of all-out war. Am I correct in thinking that the all-out war is also set for Fukuoka?
The all-out war is set to Fukuoka. The exact match is not made. Also about the Brave Gate.
There'll be
a Brave Gate contendership match in the Kobe Art Center on Saturday between Kagetora and Ginki Horiguchi. They're threatening to see who has the best Stardust press, which is worrisome given that their combined age is close to 100. But the winners of that will go on to face Ryoya Tanaka in his eighth Brave Gate title defense in Fukuoka. And yeah, no, we have that all-out war coming out of the Shimizu and Shun Skywalker match. It's Gaja Dokuro, essentially everyone but Kakuta. It's Shimizu, it's Ishin, it's Kato, it's Kai, it's Minora, going up against a Saipatra and Team 2000X business partnership. Masa Katamiya, the chairman of Team 2000X, made an appearance announcing that the relationship between Shun and Ozawa has extended to offering their assistance at this show. He will be joined with Takashi Sugiura to team with Shun Skywalker, Hamare, and El Cielo of Saipatra. And it's a 5-on-5 all-out war happening, and especially with what was going on in the Skywalker and Shimizu match, as well as the Cielo Hamare versus Kai and Yoshiki Kato match, it does. The attention is now fully off Natural Vibes now, and we are back at Saipatra versus Gacha Dokoro, and we are going into Fukuoka at a fever pitch after what happened today. Skywalker, just to talk about the, I think the Skywalker Shimizu match is kind of the first thing to really touch on.
Yeah. Here, okay. So real quick, just to pause for just a second. So it is official. I'm checking the Spore site right now, and so we do have the Triangle Gate match confirmed of KZ and Gucci and Gyuchi and Aki against the Triangle Gate guys of Hyo, Ben, and Junior. And then that 10-man All Out War is confirmed: Shun, Hamare, Cielo, Segura and Kitamiya versus Shimizu, Kai, Minora, Ishin, and Kato. Jason Lee has been off shows for a few weeks now with an injury. I have no timetable on when he's set to return. I know he's booked for the Gacha Dokoro Produce show in March, but I have no word on Jason or what his health status is at this point. So there's a big picture thought that I have leaving this Korakuen. I guess big picture Korakuen real quick. I did not love this show. I, at times, did not like this show. What is your read top to bottom on Truthgate?
I think that one person made a enormous step forward in their kind of third chapter now joining up of Natural Vibes. I thought one person kind of looked a little overwhelmed by the moment in that kind of match. And the angle stuff, I liked how that Skywalker kind of got ahead of Shimizu, but I know that that's kind of a divergent thing, and especially considering that that happens after we do have a bit of news to catch you up on, Case. Dragon Gate's now a chair shot promotion, and after that kind of finish, after that kind of chair shot, I could see being a little bit rough here. But yeah, I was on the show last week really excited about the show, but also having some big questions about especially like how the construction was leading into Fukuoka in particular. That was more of my piece about Memorial Gate, and I was kind of proven right about that. But you know, I felt like honestly the best match of the week wasn't in Korakuen, and it was the main event of Memorial Gate, and that was like the only thing out of these two days and the matches that I feel like in some ways reached their full potential. In some ways, I would say it's interesting because I think the programs and in particular Saipatra and Gacha Dokoro, it feels like that they added fuel at the right time for that kind of feud, but you still kind of have issues with the Dreamgate picture coming out of here. And I mean, Shimizu still kind of did an idiot thing at a time where we don't really need him to do that. I mean, calling himself Big R Shimizu and that big promo to set up the all-out war just kind of took us right back to 2014 in a lot of ways with him. So I'm really conflicted on this show, to be quite honest. Like, but the one thing I'll say is the person that I think coming out of the show really took that huge step forward is Gyuchi. Like, he felt great in the main event. Aki, not as far. Gyuchi looked like someone who should have been in Natural Vibes. Aki's gear looked kind of like a joke on at his expense, you know? Like, and it was kind of like a tough, at least for me, like takeaway getting through this show, especially after how everything felt in January. This was not the follow-up that I thought that they should be doing, even though there are things I think really kicked off going into Fukuoka in particular. Again, Gacha Dokoro and Saipatra.
So we're 10 minutes into this episode. We have a giant, you know, big five show coming up. Old building, new show, different time of the year at the end of the month. And only in passing did you mention the thing that I want to lead off with. And it's the reason that I want to lead off with it is we have once again found ourselves in a position where Madoka Kakuta and Yuki Yoshioka are wrestling for the Open the Dreamgate Championship. And it is such an afterthought. It has become the cuck world title match of all cuck world title matches. It sits in the corner while Shun Skywalker dominates the attention, while Big Boss Shimizu dominates the attention. In 2023, it was Skywalker and Monte and Ultimo and Dragon Kid and Strong Machine J dominating the attention. And I said to you the last time we talked about a Corkin show, coming out of that January Corkin, I said, Mike, I don't know if a six-man tag match with those two, even if it's a really good six-man tag match, I don't know if that's going to do the job to elevate that match to be what it needs to be. And they did a six-man tag that was pretty good, not great, and they did what I would call a soft angle that I don't think added fuel to the fire. And I'm just astounded by this. I can't believe that we are once again, and I know we have a Kobe show, and I know we have a Kyoto show coming up. I don't think anything is going to happen on those shows that is going to drastically change my opinion. If it does, I will come on here and apologize. But I cannot believe that once again, we are going in to a cold Yoshioka versus Kakuta Dreamgate match. I can't believe that match was pre-intermission with an angle that was at least an attempt, but not one that really blew me away. And here
and
we
an
are
angle
again.
That we've seen a lot with Kakuta over his title run.
Yes. I can't believe that they didn't start the match nose to nose, trying to get Corkin into it. You know, they didn't feel, I mean, they were the least interesting chemistry in the match, because I found what Kakuta was doing with Daya and Tanaka to be way more interesting than what he was doing with Yoshioka.
And I kind of think that Yoshioka was the one holding up the end of the deal, because we got glimpses of Terminator Yoshioka, like shrugging off, and especially in some of the exchanges with Kakuta, but it's just kind of Kakuta going through the motions in a way. Like, I don't know with the character of Yoshioka, and like the thing that everyone is really kind of clamoring to is we want the look of him that he's able to kind of shrug it off, and it just like keeps on, like you have to kill him with fire, and the way that like he has that gas tank to outlast you, and he's going to make you outlast him. Like there's not there was very few glimpses of that between this and between what happened in Wakayama. Like, I mean, Wakayama, you have him doing a real kind of frustrating 8-man tag with Paradox for some reason, instead of going up head to head with Kakuta. And then you lead into Corkin, and after Skywalker gets knocked out by Kakuta leading into Dangerous Gate, and after Benkei was knocked out by Kakuta leading into their Corkin match, doing it a third time when you're trying to get Yoshioka back to a certain kind of level is not what you do for someone who really felt like, at least as of when the match was made, like this was going to be the title switch, getting the belt off Kakuta, like having instead the fact that so Kakuta wins this six-man tag, all of D Courage versus Kakuta, Ishin, and Minoru, after pile driving Yoshioka on the floor via count out after there was already a long real tease for it, and they play off of that in the post intermission match with it. And at the time it was like, all right, now we have to see Yoshioka kind of rev up and go and get at his throat in the lead up. You're like, no, there's not gonna be an opportunity for that, because this is the go home angle, because like I assume that they're going to face off in some sort of outpost match and Kobe and Kyoto, but there's not a lot you can do there to really have Yoshioka go into the match feeling like that he has that mode back. Like, you see the glimpses of it, and I feel like he's trying, but though maybe it's the way that Kakuta portrays himself. And you're absolutely right. The issue wasn't Kakuta out to lunch this entire match, because with Daya and Tanaka, and I felt like the sequence work from Daya and Tanaka was great in this match, but we just weren't getting what was needed for the headline match. And you're absolutely right. Like, the fact that this was pre-intermission, and then we had the much bigger Gaja Dokuro angle afterwards, and then we have a big 10-man tag setting up the Triangle Gate match, and an all-Asia tag match being made in the post-match main event. All of that stuff happening after you did this angle for the Dreamgate. So you have four different things that GM Ryo Saito decided were more important than your biggest title in the promotion.
And the problem ultimately falls, and this is where, you know, I've talked at length about how conflicted I am with this Kakuta reign, because the Ben match was very good, and the Susumu match was very good, and the build to the Valletta match, which was all on the shoulders of Valletta was very good, and I thought they got the most out of that match that they could. But
that was the most effective outpost work that they were doing with like the quick match that the two of them had in Sapporo leading up into their Dringa match. So they've been able to not just do the knockout angle with Kakuta, to be clear.
But the build of the Valletta match was all Valletta. You know, that was him becoming one of the most interesting guys in wrestling over the course of that tournament. So we're just at a point where I'm tired of this Kakuta reign. I don't like it. I don't like his character. I don't like Gaja Dokuro. I'm really, really cold on this unit right now. And while there are specific things that I actually enjoyed about, I would say, each of these matches, Kai and Kato versus Cielo and Homari, 5 minutes DQ finish. Isha Minoru Kakuta versus Dias Naka Yoshioka, count out finish, 11 minutes. Skywalker versus Shimizu, DQ finish in 6 minutes. I actually really liked the finish of Skywalker Shimizu. I thought it was clever, but still, to have three Gaja Dokuro matches in a row, all have some sort of fuck finish, when I'm just not in this unit a ton to begin with, I found that to be really grating. And this unit is starting to remind me of the really sleazy era of RED, sort of that immediate run post-Pac, where they hadn't figured out what they wanted to be yet, sort of pre-SB Kento coming in and sort of giving that unit a new life. And it's reminding me a little bit of Antios. And I think this promotion is missing with me because of Kakuta as the leader. If Kakuta got bounced tomorrow and Shimizu became the top guy, I think my impression of this unit would change pretty dramatically. But right now, for as talented as he is in the ring, because the output is not the issue with Kakuta, it's everything else that I am just not buying into whatsoever right now.
And I think you raise a really valid point when you talk about how heel units operate, especially in this promotion, and what is kind of required of them. Ishin is your talker, and Ishin is a comedic talker. Shimizu, as we saw on this show, is still someone that you're not going to trust to hit the home run promo. And you go down the list of it, Minoru can't cut a promo. Yoshiki Kato hasn't been asked of him, to be quite honest. Kai can, but Kai is so decycled that if Kai started cutting promos, then everyone, you've lost the plot at that point, to be quite honest. And I don't know. I like Gaja Dokuro, I think, several orders of magnitude more than you do. This was not in the moment for me as grating as it was, it seems, for you. But like when you look at it on a paper, and I look at my notes, and it goes like, all right, I don't rate the Homari and Cielo versus Kai and Kato because it was a 5-minute DQ. D-Courage and Gaja Dokuro, all my comments on it are essentially things that I liked from Daya and Tanaka. And I'm just basically writing the angles that are happening between Skywalker and Shimizu. It does make you feel like the heel unit isn't where it should be. And especially given that this heel unit's not like a baby anymore. This heel unit is coming up on 6 months. They're having this produce show that the conceit is, all right, everyone is, the Gaja Dokuro guys are booking their own matches and what they kind of want to see with this. Maybe the lack of identity comes into play here a little bit because like that's inherently a very boring concept for a produce show, I feel like. But there is something lacking. And I do think that when you like take it out of the match, the thing that kind of draws to mind to me at least is this is a heel unit that needs to have someone to be out front and center, be the Yamato and Mad Blanky. And the way that Yamato acted kind of dictated the entire unit. The way that Kakuta is acting is not working. But like, I think we can agree with that.
No, because I go back to, and again, it might be a literacy issue with me. I might not be comprehending it well, but I don't know what he's supposed to be. I still can't tell if he's supposed to be like a gym class bully or like a lackadaisical guy in the back of the classroom. And I just, I don't know when it's not getting any clearer and I'm only getting more frustrated by it. And again, maybe all of this changes if you go, well, okay, they're not nailing it with Kikuta, but man, look at the work that Shimizu is doing. I mean, through a month and a week in 2026, there are very few wrestlers that I think have had a better in-ring year than Shimizu. But I think it's inherently flawed, even in a promotion like Dragon Gate, where they you know, just historically are a little weird with their titles. I think it's flawed that Shimizu feels so much more interesting and feels so much hotter than Kikuta does.
And how much of that for Shimizu is the newness and the way that they booked him in January?
But that's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they have the power to also book Kikuta in an interesting way. You're right. It helps that it was, you know, a shocking return and then a shocking turn and then all of these things. But I really like the way that he was presented on this show as well. You know, I don't think the Shimizu thing is going to slow down anytime soon. Whereas the Kikuta thing, I feel like, okay, let's have him get rid of the Dreamgate belt, and then we can get, a Kikuta Kai Twin Gate challenger. You can throw him into the endless string of Triangle Gate challengers, and we could just cycle him down for a little bit. Because I think Kikuta will be a Dreamgate champion again. But I'm coming out of this show, I just couldn't believe how little was done with the Dreamgate belt compared to everything else, and I couldn't believe that that's all we got out of Kikuta and Yoshioka together. You know, not that I needed this to be 4/20/91 and some great six-man tag All Japan Classic, but I don't really feel like they got, I was going to say the most, but hardly anything out of specifically Kikuta and Yoshioka being in the ring with one another. They did nothing. As somebody who's been apprehensive about their chemistry for months now, really going back to that King of Gate match where I thought, that wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. You know, I feel like there was a greater novelty to Monte versus Ishin, and I thought Skywalker versus Doi blew it out of the water. Yeah, I've been really apprehensive about what they're going to do in the ring with one another, and this show did nothing to make me more excited about a Dreamgate match.
Yeah, and this kind of angle, like, we don't have the full cards for Art Center right now, but the way that they had, I think it was Koki Oshima just do the ragdoll carry him out here. You're not going to like you have a show in 2 days. Yoshioka should not be wrestling on that show after that kind of angle. So when's the next time Yoshioka and Kikuta can kind of come back and get at it? Okay, 4 days later. Should really Yoshioka be like in matches, like given the fact that Skywalker then went away for a couple of weeks before the match. Ben, there was a whole hullabaloo about, like, oh gosh, Ben having another like concussion / a knockout kind of thing, and he went away for like this time. Like there's not a way to kind of dig out of this other than hope that the match when it happens on the 23rd just completely floors it, and then it just like, okay, finally y'all roll the dice and hit on this, and you hit on it once, but I don't think it makes up for your previous attempts and what you did to lead up on the match somehow being able to kind of pull it out of their ass collectively, you know?
Yeah, I just, again, to reiterate myself one more time, it's stunning to me that Kikuta and Yoshioka are in this position again, where at least when this card is revealed on paper, my eyes are going to go to the Brave Gate match, because I think either Kagetora or Genki are fascinating in their own separate ways. My eyes are going to go to whatever Twin Gate match is booked, and my eyes are going to go to that All Out War, even though I don't like the All Out War match on paper, and I'm annoyed by it. We haven't even gotten to that yet. I'm annoyed by that match, and still, I'm going to look at 3 or 4 or 5 matches before I go, oh, and there's also this Dreamgate match on this show. And it seems like it's going to be one of those things where, let's say this is an 8-match show and All Out War is 6. They do it pre-intermission. So
right, then you come back Triangle Gate and Dreamgate. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Triangle Gate that late would be interesting given the guys involved. I bet.
I mean, who's left for the Twin Gate to go second from the top?
Well, you could do Yamadoi just cold, just because that match just exists. Because you could.
I don't
it
think
then.
Doi's not booked, man.
Well, that is disappointing. That sucks.
Sorry to pour ice on pour cold water on it. Unless you're thinking that they're gonna get Koji Doi.
I don't want that. Okay, so Natural Vibes is done. And I keep on asking around. I can't get a read on when Flamita's coming back to Japan. I would guess maybe April. For that Hokkaido tour. Yeah, it seems like it's not going to be anytime soon, though. So
I would guess that he gets in before IG.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I have not heard anything. That's just how the schedules kind of go. I would expect to see him around those times. So that's usually when he shows back up.
The bummer is that he's not even working a ton in Mexico right now, because I always have an eye out for him. And I haven't
seen him pop up on anything. Yeah.
No, he was supposed to work one of the Santo shows.
And he got moved.
He got hurt. I believe I read on Cubs this week that he and Bandito are wrestling in Riot this weekend, which means we'll never see it, which is a bummer. But he's not
doing... He has only wrestled once in 2026.
Yeah, and was that for IWRG or somebody else?
This was for a Producciones Sanchez Arenasia 40th anniversary show.
Yeah, okay. I believe it or not, I missed that one. So yeah, he hasn't popped up in IWRG, because I check every week.
It was an old school Black Generation reuniting with Flamita, Bandito, and Emperador Azteca.
In a trios match?
Against Hino Del Canis Lupus, Hellboy, and Mictlan Mex.
Is there a link to that?
Buddy, I'm just pulling up his
that
cage
sounds,
match.
That sounds fucking awesome. Wait, hold on. Let me pull up Flamita's cage match.
Actually, I don't think any of this may tape, because it also had AAA involved.
Oh, God, the fucking bane of my existence. That sucks. That match sounds awesome.
The third from the top, Los Psycho Circus versus Tokyo Bad Boys.
Oh, this. Yeah, Arena Neza, and I don't see a YouTube link there, because Cage Match is good about some of these shows having the YouTube link there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that sucks. That match sounds like a lot of fun.
I know, right?
Okay. Yeah, but he's not even working IWRG right now. So I don't know what's up with Flamita, but I would like to see him work more than he is. But anyways, okay, so Twin Gate match.
Open
can't be
question.
Anybody from Vibes. It can't be anybody from D-Courage. It can't be anybody from Gaja Dokoro. So yeah, I mean, you're looking at Yamato Susumu, Yamato Dragon Kid, Susumu Dragon Kid,
Hulk,
or outsiders,
Hulk Yama.
I guess. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Hulk Yama is the most boring possibility there.
But they might have to do it.
If you're going to do Yama Hulk, just do Yama and Susumu instead.
That's true.
He's got nothing going on.
Yeah. Other than being the king of Okinawa, case.
So, it's a shockingly cold Dreamgate match. I'm ready for this Kakuta stuff to end. I'm ready for this unit to feel differently, because Mike, I mean, historically we talk about the pulse of this promotion. You can often read it through two different ways. One is how they're doing in Cork, and January was a great Corkin show, and so we came out of that show buzzing and very hopeful. And this one I did not like as much, and you can hear the negativity again. We haven't even gotten to the All Out War stuff yet, but you can also gauge it by their heel unit. And I really felt like the first 7 months of last year, when Yamato was champion and Z-Brats were humming along in a way that felt really well-defined and well-oiled, that this promotion was on a heater. And I go back to just that idea that Z-Brats, by the end of their run, had such... And this is a compliment. They had such a plug-and-play way of doing those trios matches, where there was just a high floor, like a 3.5-star floor, 4.5-star ceiling for any combination of Z-Brats trios match that you wanted to work. And I don't feel that way right now. I don't think even the subtle changes that have been made in Gaja Dokoro, I don't think they're there. I think this is a unit that I'm looking to move on from. I'm looking for rebranding. I'm looking for a heel unit that feels different. Again, this is the type of thing that, like, 2019 Eita feels like he would be involved in, and I don't particularly like that. Kakuta sort of has the vibe of a 2019 Eita right now, where he's the leader and he's the least interesting guy in his unit.
Yeah. And Kakuta's not bringing like Kazuma Sakamoto out of the woodwork to back him up here with it. And
no, they're leaning on Kai a lot. And I'm typically a very big Kai defender, but I don't really think he's lighting the world on fire right now. You know, I think
he was a more than competent third in the Triangle Gate Challenge. And that's where I kind of want him to be at right now.
He's not bad, but there's been a level of Kai that's been actively very good. I mean, there's been a few years in Dragon Gate where Kai's been one of the 50 best wrestlers in the world, and he's not the top 100 guy right now. So I remain bullish on the Shimizu stuff. Again, my ideal scenario is Yoshioka beats Kakuta and then Shimizu beats Yoshioka a week later in Osaka. I still think that is such an interesting angle that they won't do, which is a bummer, but I'm very bullish on the Shimizu stuff. Ishin is out of this world right now. I have a specific Ishin spot I want to mention when we briefly talk about Memorial Gate, just once again illuminate how good this guy is. And I really like the way they're handling Kato, but Jason's Kato hurt. Minoru, I mean, what an afterthought, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I guess if Minoru's not an afterthought, then he's being shoved down our throat, so I'll take the afterthought. And then you've got Kai and Kakuta. I am not into this unit right now, and on a show like this, it really jumped out to me when you had three matches in a row with Gajah Dokuro, with three fuck finishes in one way or another, even if I like the Shimizu Skywalker finish, it really jumped out to me on this show that I think this is a heavily flawed unit.
Yeah, I would say that the stuff that Kato is doing CLO has been very, very good long-term kind of thing. And I'm if that was in a vacuum, I would have been very content with it. But again, when you look at it on paper, after like out of the moment, that's where it kind of, the three finishes in the row kind of resonate with you. Let's talk about this all-out war. So it's Gajah Dokuro versus Sai Patra and Team 2000X. It starts off in the post-match from the Shimizu and Skywalker thing. We like the angle, but it was one of those angles that looked better on TV than I think it did live, just because essentially after a Skywalker hits a home run on Shimizu on the outside, it turns into a count out tease, not as over as expected, and that kind of could probably be counted to like the fact that there was two fuck finishes right before that. And then Shimizu goes for the big boss press. He eats water on it, but he gets himself up for the shot put slam. Shun pulls Yagi in towards him, and then with his other hand unmasks himself, leaving his mask in Skywalker or in Shimizu's hand. Immediate DQ for the mask grip, something that, again, I thought was really smart, but I think it's the issue of being able to see it on stream play out versus in the audience where it was not as over with it. And then we got into Shimizu and Skywalker cutting promos against each other. Skywalker on Twitter has just been savage about Shimizu, saying like, oh, you've lost all of this weight, and now what are you? You don't have the skill to really be here with the but all you had essentially in the past was being a big guy. And it was the leading up to building up this all-out war thing that they wanted to fight in Fukuoka. Gajah Dokuro points out that Sai Patra has only three. That's when Shun talks about the business relationship of Team 2000X. Out comes Masa Kitamiya, the chairman, and he cuts a promo basically announcing all of this. Then Shimizu reveals himself as Big R Shimizu still, and the crowd kind of just stops dead for a moment. And later it comes out that the fifth person in the team will be Takashi Sugiura. So it's Sai Patra, Skywalker, Hamari CLO, along with Masa Kitamiya and Takashi Sugiura versus Big Boss Shimizu, Ishin, Kota Minora, Yoshiki Kato and Kai in an all-out war match. For listeners who have not followed the promotion, when an all-out war match is, it's basically a no rules, no DQ match that is the big tip that this is going to be a plunder fest, essentially. I can't think of a time of an all-out war case that did not have a bunch of table spots.
Yeah, nor I well. There's like a Mad Blanky Jimmy's one when the Jimmy's did the war paint in Cork and
combat mode. Yeah. Combat mode.
I think that was an all out war. I don't remember a table in that match. By the way, yesterday, as we're recording this, yesterday we passed the 10-year anniversary of the Monster Express Die of Hearts for Zerk losing unit disbands match, which I just wanted to shoehorn in here at some point because that's probably one of the 10 best matches in company history, and I can't believe it's 10 years old.
God, that feels like it's almost 25 in a lot of ways.
It's like, crazy. Yeah. On one hand, it feels 25, and on the other, I'm like, God, I remember watching that, and that's, you know, I mean, 2016 is a historically great year for wrestling, and that is as good as almost anything that happened that year. It's a top five match for me that year, but that is, that hit me yesterday. I was like, oh, 2-4-16. That's one of those matches that I know by date, and I can envision the final few minutes of that match in my head. As like, I can't believe it's been 10 years since that match. So that's crazy. But, well, I'll be purposely coy here. Mike, you heard the same story that I did 18 months ago. I started doing the Windhorse fingers when Shun Skywalker nearly killed Big Boss Shimizu with a chair shot.
Yeah, this is
that's a legend. That's, I don't know anything, but boy, did that suddenly make sense to me when Skywalker fucking killed him.
That's kind of what I was wondering, like if there were how this match was going to go today.
I did the Windhorse fingers immediately on that one. That might have look. I don't know anything, and the Shimizu thing nobody wants to talk about. Nobody has talked about.
I could use a kind of a thing to describe this. There's something called system mindset, people. Ricochet showed it yesterday, and basically you do the business and you keep it to a close circle. Ricochet, although I think both of us heard of discontent with him in WWE, that never got out. You know why? Because Dragon Gate handles themselves within the system. When things are working right, nothing's going to come out about what Shimizu did, because that's how the company wants to operate. It's just the mindset.
The only thing that I heard was a single sourced, unverified story from somebody that I trust, from somebody that could very easily have the knowledge of knowing what happened with Shimizu. But boy, that chair shot. That chair shot made a lot of sense all of a sudden. So take that for what you will. But look, I like the finish. I thought this was a clever way of keeping Shimizu strong, but also not being overbearing with, again, some of the Gaja Dokuro stuff. But I don't know what we're doing with this unit. Again, I said coming out of the last Cork, and I really don't need Valletta in Dragon Gate ever again. I would welcome him back if he came back, but to me, his story has been told, and I'm ready to move on. But this is a unit that can't survive on Shun, Himari, and Cielo. Especially with their, you know, like all three of those guys kind of need to be protected. And so that puts them in a weird spot as well. And
that was an issue with Johnny, because Johnny is physically protected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so it's why when this unit formed, go back to October, I said this unit, it's not that I need them to replace Love and Peace, but I actually think it would be smart for this unit to be like an uber baby face, almost cheerleader type unit, because then they can win a ton and people would be able to lean into it and it would be okay. This is sort of like an all-star team unit, but they're in an awkward position where they can't just win all the time. And now they're in an awkward position where, you know, they've kind of turned Shun, kind of haven't. And it almost feels like I'm watching 2020 Shades of Grey Cody Rhodes with him sometimes, which is not really what I want. I would like to be able to cheer for Shun Skywalker as a fan, and I'm not being given that right now, and it's frustrating. And then it's frustrating because I don't want anything to do with Team 2000X, whether it's Ozawa, whether it's Kitamiya, whether it's Sagira. You know, I like Masa Kitamiya. I don't want him anywhere near Dragon Gate. I'm not even super interested in Sagira being anywhere near Dragon Gate. And so now I'm in a unit that I think is in limbo. It's in those weird shades of gray area. They're wrestling a unit where even if I collectively like those five guys, I'm not into that unit right now. Oh, and by the way, your least favorite thing in Japanese wrestling is being added to this match. So I'm sure the match will be fine, but I don't know, Mike. I feel like I'm a little worried at that they're going to have Kitamiya eat up Shimizu, and I think that's dangerous for Dragon Gate.
Yeah, like, There is the firmly unserious side of Saipatra and Shun Skywalker that I think in some ways colors how like the character is portrayed. And I think I have a lot more grace for how gradual Shun Skywalker's face turn is going. Like, it's something to me that it could not be an immediate moment. It is something that, like, frankly, you know what Saipatra really needs, and you know what kind of person that you can't put into Saipatra until you do the legwork, and who, now that they are back, would be the glue of that unit. And maybe it doesn't solve the Lost Post issue, which you might be able to do. Just if Fuda comes back around, throw a Skywalker mask on him. Just let him be the Lost Post. It's fine. But
I still think Monte. Yeah. Oh, God. Well, we'll get to Monte. That's maddening. But I go back to the fact that in October, when he headlined a Corkin show with Saipatra, they should have just put Kimura in this unit. I think Kimura being in Saipatra would have
never recovered.
It would have solved a lot of problems, and it would have been a lot for him in a very short amount of time. And as we see with Aki, sometimes that elevation, you know, you stumble there. But Kimura has become an afterthought, and I think he's better than the level that he's being pushed at right now.
We've seen him better than this level the week of his debut. And that's what makes it frustrating that he's now teaming with Arik. In case you haven't listened to this yet, I go into depth about that pullback. And like, Kimura is now just treated like any other rookie 6 months into their career, when you had a moment for him not to be that way.
Yeah, you had a moment where he felt really special, and I felt like he was rising to that occasion. And so now it's just sort of a nightmare scenario with this unit where I don't know how they get out of it. I still find the chemistry of this unit, being Skywalker, Hamare, and Cielo sharing the ring together, to be really, really interesting. I think they have a super high ceiling possibility with any combination of Gaja Dokuro, but I don't like the Team 2000X inclusion whatsoever, and I just don't know how you get out of this vicious cycle of three-guy units. I'm ready for something new. I'm ready for a fourth guy there. I'm ready for a change. I feel like, you know, in January, it was like, okay, you know, this is, and I'm trying not to overreact to one middling Corkin show, but in January, it felt like there were a lot of possibilities and a lot of different avenues they could go down. And I feel like this show, weirdly, they put up a lot of walls and closed a lot of doors. And now it's kind of like, where do you go from here? Okay.
No, it's not at all the kind of show that you really want to go home on in a lot of different ways.
It's hard to tell with Dragon Gate tickets always, but I will say, looking at the ticketing site for the Uno Dos Tres tickets, not exactly a hot seller. So I think they're leaning on Team 2000X, and I think they're leaning on this Fujinami appearance, because they have a cold as fuck Dreamgate match, and now they're going to have to really lean into Shimizu and Noah guys and whatever else. And I think they have misplayed their hand on this show in a great deal after coming out of a really strong January show.
Case, the biggest tell about how they are going into it is the fact that they booked Tatsumi Fujinami to begin with.
Yeah, and like, you know, I unfortunately am never going to be angry.
Well, Fujinami is not going to be at Uno Dos Tres. That's going to be at Corkin next month, allegedly.
Is it okay?
Yeah. Ryo Saito has to go text Dory Funk Jr. And you know, like that Dory Funk Jr. probably has like one of those phones that still uses like T9 texting, you know, like, but it can't be made for 2 weeks, but that's going to be a Corkin show, which is another kind of a thing about how things are going. We saw how ticket pullback happened today. It's not anything like super drastic, seeing that the rest of the industry, like the doldrums that happen after January 4th instead kicked in on February 1st, essentially, for that building. So having Fujinami and the March Cork, and I guess, is their way to do this. But yeah, no, I'm looking at the Lawson site and nothing is sold out. Nothing is mentioned, including the front row.
No, it's I noticed that before the Cork, and so the Team 2000X stuff did not necessarily surprise me, but if it's not Ozawa, I'm not really sure how effective it is. But the problem is that I also don't really want to see Ozawa. So I don't know. There's Noah guys that I would like to see in Dragon Gate, and they are not Masaki Tamiya, and they are not Takashi Sugiura in this context. Ishin and Sugiura, I'm sure, will be fine, but I'm not into it.
No. it's just you have that, and that dominating so much of the real estate of this show. Like, you know, when we talked about like September of last year and how it was like, oh man, that 90 minutes of Corican like this, it, you had the other side of the coin today, I feel like. Should we move on to talk about the Triangle Gate situation and Love and Peace and Natural Vibes here?
There's a ton of Natural Vibe stuff to talk about. Let's get into it.
Yeah, so we got the official debut today of Chapter 5 of Natural Vibes with Gyuchi, with the former Daikiyani Gyuchi, and Akihiro Sahara as At Sign Key. They came out opening the show. Of course, they did the Dragon Gate thing of Aki still had the dread wig on, and Sahara and Daiki had on a knit cap, so you couldn't see their transformation. They come out, and you have one guy whose look, Gyuchi's look, is great. He kind of looks like what you would. I saw John Carroll make comments about like what would happen if KZ never had that sleazeball face, and that's kind of what Gyuchi looks at. And Aki came out in the big man singlet with iridescent fins on his back, and apparently he is the party dinosaur. So we have Brodus Clay now in this promotion. And yeah, the main event was 10-man tag, the entirety of Love and Peace, the Open the Triangle Gate champions, Hyo, Benkei, and national hero Mochizuki Jr., along with the Twin Gate champion team, Jackie Rita, against the new fifth chapter of Natural Vibes, KZ, Strong Machine J, UT, Aki, and Gyuchi. And the finish was KZ elbow strike after the KO Benkei knockout elbow strike spot to get the win. Immediately afterwards, he calls for the Triangle Gate Challenge, nominating the Young Vibes member to go up with him. So at Fukuoka, it is the third defense of the Triangle Gate titles for Love and Peace, Benkei, Hyo, and Mochizuki Jr. And they'll be going up against KZ and getting their second Triangle Gate match in that matter of months, Gyuchi and Aki.
So let's start with the names and the presentation, and then we can move on to that main event match, which I have a lot of thoughts on. But this is the big thing coming out of this show. They made a really big deal about getting these guys new names, about these guys unveiling their new gear, unveiling their new looks.
And it was over.
And yes, I think they did. I think they did an excellent job with the presentation of all of this. Mm-hmm. I have no notes on the Gyuchi stuff. I think he's been ready for this for a long time. We were in the same conversation with John Carroll today. I think he has been overperforming for such a long time now. I mean, this guy debuted 3 years ago next month. He's not new, and I think he's been very, very good for a long time now. So as Voices of Wrestling enters 30 under 30 season, he's a guy that I have my eyes on this year because I think he's finally going to be given an opportunity to prove that he could be in that spot, that he could be one of the 30 best wrestlers under 30, and I'm really intrigued by that. So I'm hoping that this represents like, all right, we're going to do something with him. I love his look. To me, yeah, he looks like KZ Sito. I mean, I would like to see those guys have a Twin Gate match just because they look so similar in their presentation right now. I thought they nailed it there. The Aki stuff, I said last month, you know, a guy like that, that has that jockish background, that has, for lack of better phrasing, lack of a better term, you know, he has a more traditional Puro look and style and is sort of not the Dragon Gate mold. It's very important to this promotion that he's able to do the Dragon Gate things. That was one of the many downfalls of Kaisuke Okuda, was he only had the one mode. He could only do Kaisuke Okuda things. He couldn't do Dragon Gate things. Now nobody knows where Kaisuke Okuda is. So I understand the gimmick change for Sahara. I support the gimmick change for Sahara. I like that he's being given something to do. The name is terrible. I'm going to have a note in my written review, which should hopefully be up on Monday at voicesofwrestling.com, if not then Tuesday. But I will not be participating in this at sign nonsense when I write his name. It will be AKI in my reviews going forward, in the same way that I never wrote out Genki Horiguchi, H-A-G me, during his Jimmy's run. I'm not participating in that. I think, and it's KZ's fault. KZ said it on Twitter, but I think it's a horrible name. I don't think it's going to do him any favors. Mike, you know the perception of Japanese Dragon Gate fans and how they feel about DDT wrestlers. For those that don't, the general consensus among your hive mind hardcore Dragon Gate fan in Japan is that the DDT roster is made up of all the guys that aren't good enough to be in Dragon Gate. Aki's new look makes him look like a DDT wrestler, and I think he desperately needs new gear already.
Yeah, the red mohawk. I didn't like the red mohawk because it immediately makes you think of Shimizu and his mohawk.
It made me think of UT, which that era of UT I don't really want to be compared to either.
No. UT just kind of fumbling around, having a mental breakdown with Kotoka that time. Yeah. So you had that, and I could overlook a bad look. Shun Skywalker's first big step ring gear case didn't even have gloves and a mask that match. Like, you can get over it. Like, my bigger issue is he didn't step up. He outright looked like the one person out of 10 that was not ready for the situation. Love and peace. They are the oil machine. They are the this is Dragon Gate standard at this point. Like, to the extent that I, as a note for Memorial Gate, said this is Dragon Gate kind of six man tag. Aki didn't have it. Aki, there was one of his big comebacks was a tilt-a-whirl where he completely lost hold of Rita, which is something that has never happened before, and he just felt completely overwhelmed by the moment. And it is something where it's the with his background and with his look, there is a level of difficulty, I feel like, just being frank, it is hard for a chubby guy to be taken serious in this promotion.
Yes.
Like, historically, like that, it almost doomed Akira Tozawa's career 20 years ago, was the fact that his tag team partner got chubby and pulled it off. And then they thought Tozawa could, and he couldn't pull it off. And it was probably one of the biggest instances of, oh my God, this promotion is eventually going to have a massive fissure that would come out in 2018. Aki, kind of feels like a joke, frankly. And he was treated somewhat more like a joke. And I think that that's an issue when you are of that body type and you wrestle in that kind of way. If you are seen kind of as a goofball, that is something that, I mean, on this very show, I pointed out an issue I had with Shimizu, historically someone who's had some of the biggest issues overcoming that kind of stereotype. And Aki just fed into it for the entire half hour. And to me, that is not what you want from that character. And from a guy who I really thought that he had a level of pluck when he had the opportunity to. And I'm hoping that in Fukuoka, he's able to push it back in the mind. And then the spots that didn't work were able to work, and that he's able to at least pull it together in ring. Because to me, that's the bigger issue. The look, there's been lots of bad looks in Dragon System history, and there will be a lot of bad looks in Dragon System history. It just compounds with someone having not being able to step up into the moment in the way that we have seen young guys step up into the moment in the past, frankly.
You know, if the best case scenario of a match like this is Ryoya Tanaka joining D Courage in 2023, which I still think is possibly the best, hey, here's a new guy you should care about match of all time. Gucci again, pass the flying colors. I'm really excited for him. I'm really excited for him in this unit. I think it's going to work out great. I guess in the same way that I shouldn't overreact to this entire show having a weird tone to it that I didn't particularly like, I think for you, I think the Aki stuff is gonna fix itself. I'm not surprised that I'm not surprised that he had the output that he had in this match, you know, because even at his best as a young boy, it was Rey de Parejas last year, and it was a lot of slapping and a lot of ugly wrestling that you and I both really enjoy. But even in that context, or even in a Mochizuki Dojo six man, there aren't a lot of times where I've been like, wow, look at the fluidity of Akihiro Sahara, because he also, at least on television, hasn't been in those opportunities a ton. So he had the one glaring spot with Rita in this match, which you have to hold against him. It's a huge knock. It has to be mentioned. I would argue that, you know, even I went 4 stars on this match, but it was like a gentleman's 4. It was a begrudging 4 because
I was an angry 3.75.
Yeah, it didn't have the polish even among some of the other guys, there's an awkward junior strong machine J sequence of this match. Now, the reason I went four on it is you get to the sequence where all eight guys are going in training moves. And I'm sorry, but there's still no other promotion doing wrestling like that. And I thought they executed that at such a high level that it was like, all right, this is a flawed match, but this is still a great match. But the Aki stuff, I think he's going to figure it out. I think this is a very new environment for him. And I think without the one glaring Rita spot, I think we're probably more focused on the gear than the output, but that Rita spot was glaring and it does have to be noted, but I'm not as worried about him. I think he'll be okay going forward.
Oh, and he has like the perfect situation for him to knock it out of the park. You know, like that's the thing is like this can quickly be forgotten, like Shun Skywalker's first mask and gloves, you know, yeah. Like it could very well be a footnote, but I feel like it's worth pointing out like the historical kind of like the issues of being a bigger guy in this promotion. I mean, there's a reason why Cyber Kong is looked at a certain way. And some of that is what has happened in his career. And some of that has been fulfilling a stereotype. And I think that needs to be pointed out.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I was thinking about Kong as I was watching him in this match where I was like, okay, this is sort of his new Hazard era Cyber Kong opportunity. We'll see what he can make of it. And then we'll see what that next chapter is. But the good thing with Vibes, especially if Gucci is going to wrestle in the way that he is, it's a very high floor unit. You know, any combination, you know, KZ and UT and Aki, I think are going to be a good trio. And Strong Machine J and KZ and Gucci, I think are going to be a good trio. I think he can very easily be the weak link of this unit while still being a very good wrestler. And I think that is sort of the best case scenario for him is that this to me, and again, maybe, you know, maybe 6 months from now, we're way wrong and Aki has really taken a level up that none of us saw coming. But I think this is a unit that's going to benefit Gucci far more in the short term. And Sahara, this will be the launching pad to what's next. And it will be, oh, remember him in Natural Vibes? That's right before he did blank. And that will be the interesting part for him.
You know what I'm still really looking forward for Aki in this unit? I want to see him team with Flamita.
Yeah.
I feel like there could be something there with those two together. Flamita has enough experience dealing with guys with his kind of type that he would be the right kind of person to help him kind of transition in, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see a broom team with Flamita. I think he could do no wrong right now. So I'm into it, and I'm into the Triangle Gate match, you know? I think Ben and Hyowin Jr. should win. I think especially based off this performance, I would not be rushing into giving Aki a title. And I don't think that's a giant indictment on Natural Vibes or these guys if they don't win this match. I know
Aki's still less than 2 years into his career.
Yeah, common wrestling logic would go, oh, new unit, new push, title match, those guys should get the title. I don't think it's disastrous if they do, but I certainly don't think it's disastrous if they end up losing that match, partially just because, you know, broken record here, but Love and Peace, pretty good at wrestling, and I'm not ready for Ben Hyowin Jr. to be done with these titles yet. So,
I
go ahead.
Another reason why I think they're going to retain, Jr.'s getting like crossover national publicity for his saving of Himeji Castle. I don't know how much you saw.
Do you know what I don't know what's going on with that.
So Himeji Castle's in, I don't know if it's in Kyoto or Kobe, but it's in that kind of general area over with Osaka, and it's like the largest castle in the country at its age, and I think one of the largest castles in the world. Like it's a UNESCO heritage site. Like it's considered like a true national, if not world, treasure essentially. And when El Kakui was there, Junior, I guess like one day was like showing him the sites around and took him to like, I mean, it's a UNESCO heritage, world heritage site. It's like one of the most incredible things on the world. And he saw a fire being lit on the ground with stuff and someone run away from it. He put out the fire, he notified people, and his action led to apprehending the person. And the city gave him special accommodation. And it's been all over the news throughout Japan, like not just Tokyo Sports and Weekly Pro, like Mainichi News and like major outlets. So Junior keeps on finding ways to kind of get viral, because he got viral a little bit ago during his excursion because he found a live action Yu-Gi-Oh thing.
I remember the Yu-Gi-Oh thing really blew up.
But yeah, no, he's considered like everyone's like, look at that nice young man who stepped up and did the right thing.
Good. I mean, that's, you know, again, let's
hope. The son of Masaaki Mochizuki, you expect that from him.
Exactly. And let's hope they're able to keep the titles a little bit longer now, because I was compiling the list again to go back to 30 under 30 for just a second. You know, I was putting together all the Dragon Gate guys that are under 30, and I could not believe that Hyo was still only 29 and is eligible for 30 under 30 this year. And let me tell you, that guy's a shoo-in for my ballot this year. I can't believe how good he is now.
He was so good in Wakayama Case. Yes, he was.
He's just, I don't know, there's sort of a show-in, show-out thing with him where he has figured it out, and this unit is so perfect for him, and this trio is so good for him. The way that they've been able to get one of my favorite Triangle Gate teams in a really long time and one of my favorite Twin Gate teams in a really long time, it's why it's just like that mid-card stuff, you know, everything but the Dream Gate, I'm just like, all right, let's just keep this as is for a little bit. Let's just rock with this and sit with this and have all of these teams and Tanaka, let's just have them run through a bunch of different guys. I'm still really enjoying seeing those guys wrestle anyone.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you on it. I guess while we're talking about Triangle Gate stuff, at least for me, Memorial Gate in Wakayama was a C-tier show that had a title match. It wasn't Natural Vibes. It was Love and Peace, Hyo, Ben, and Junior defending against Gaja, Dokuro, Kai, Kato, and Ishin. Hyo gets the win with the Samson driver. I was 4.25 on this. I thought it was the best thing in the promotion all week. And a lot of it was Ishin and a lot of it was Hyo and Junior at the right moments. And it's just what a closing stretch they had in Wakayama. Okay, so I thought this was incredible.
I'm with you. Same rating, same takeaways. The big picture on Memorial Gate is this show was such an eyesore, and it is such a Dragon Gate problem. I mean, this was a hard show for me to get through, not because it was a bad show. Opening match was a lot of fun. Kame and Rita versus Cielo and Himare. And my God, did I want to see more of Cielo and Rita together after that.
Human Jungle Gems. He used Cielo as a human jungle gem, and Cielo was like the perfect base for it.
There's still a lot out in the open about Cielo and what his potential is as a singles wrestler, but you could run that back as a Twin Gate match right now, and I think it would be excellent. I mean, he and Rita very clearly have some very special chemistry, so that was really intriguing to me. But it was a pretty fun show overall, but man, it was such an ugly atmosphere. It looked so bad. It looked so dead, even if the crowd was really into the main event. And just, you can't produce shows like this and air them. You just can't have this on your network, because this was such an unpleasant viewing experience.
Yeah, and it just, the production notes, like, we could go through it note by note again, but it was on full display here. And it's a shame, because, like, now Corkins and some of the house shows, they, it looks a lot better than it did this time last year, but this kind of put it all kind of on display. A big room where they only use the bottom part, and you see the second tier the entire time because they didn't bring a light kit and they were using the overhead lights. And I mean, even like the show itself, you had a probably one of the more greatest hits Jiro Shimbashi matches on it. Susumu and Kagetora had to, and Ho-Ho basically had to wrestle a match themselves. Like, it was a lot of Ho-Ho, which I really enjoyed. We got a Ho-Ho roll tease that got me on it. A rehash of the breakup of Shimizu from Natural Vibes. The D-Courage and Mathers versus Paradox 8, man, I really loved the finish where Tanaka converts out of the EVO into the Cross Saber, and that the Cross Saber is a move that sometimes I feel like it does not feel very good. It doesn't look very good, but like the way he transitioned into it kind of gave you the, you can hit Diamond Cutter out of anywhere kind of vibe to it. And I enjoyed that, but just like overall, like the only thing I feel, because of like the overall traps in the show, confident in recommending and telling people to go out of the way for, is the Triangle Gate match, because it stood above and was able to overcome the obviously horrible production trappings.
Really disappointing given what Memorial Gate used to look like, where it used to look like a really high-end show, even if at times it wasn't. I mean, you think back to 2020 even,
They used to have a full light a rig. They used to, because it was done by the TV station, so they would have like a light truss, like, and it was gorgeous.
Yeah, I always go back to, I think Doi versus Ata from Memorial Gate 2020 is one of the better COVID era wrestling matches, period. And that match was so good and the atmosphere was so good that it overcame any of the COVID handicaps. And part of that was because the arena looked like a major league arena. And this, I mean, this just looked so bad. It was so distracting. It's one of those that I just, you know, I'm going to send out because there was a cork, and I'm going to send out news and updates and match recommendations. And I'm going to hesitate to put that Triangle Gate match on the list because I understand that if you're not locked into this promotion, I understand why this would be a complete and total eyesore and why you wouldn't want to watch it just by clicking on the link.
No, absolutely.
I will say in our weekly Time to Glaze Ishin segment, there's the spot that Love and Peace do where Hyo does a sort of catapult into a Ben spear. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because on Corkin they did that spot with the corner cam and it looked amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. It did. Also, as much as we like to rag on Dragon Gate production, the other spot that they nailed on that Corkin show in that match was Jackie and Rita doing their stereo corner drop kicks, and they shot it from the balcony so you could see both the drop kicks at the same time. That looked awesome. They got to shoot it like that every time.
Yeah. No, they need to always have a camera up in the balcony.
Yeah, that looked really, really good. I really liked that. But the catapult spot in Wakayama, they do it to Ishin, and everybody's got to go back, or if you haven't seen the match, just have this at the back of your head when you watch it. Watch the way Ishin launches himself into the air. He ends up doing basically the outstretched jumping jack pose, like at the apex of the jumping jack. He does that motion in the air, and it becomes, in a very positive way, in a very pro wrestling way, it was cartoonish, the height and the extension of his body, and it all worked so great. And it seems like now, week after week, we're able to come on and talk about an Ishin match where there's one specific second of the match where you go, oh, that's a next level pro wrestler. And that was one of those where you go, wow, that guy is a next level pro wrestler. And Mike, I don't know how involved or how many conversations you've had about WrestleMania weekend this year. You know, I'm not going to be there. You're not going to be there. But I had two separate conversations with people that are pretty involved in WrestleMania weekend this past week. And both of them were like, oh yeah, Ishin's the guy. Like, we saw what Ishin did last year, and we've been waiting to either book him for the first time or book him again or use him in some capacity. That is the guy for this Dragon Gate group this year.
Yeah, no, and especially with like the new names listed, like I expect Ishin and Kato, kind of like Kato will be the one taking the step forward as like the new guy, but Ishin will get like the time to kind of thrive. And I mean, given like what he's able to do, like if I was putting together a non-DGUSA show in Vegas, I know who my first few calls would be, and one of them would be Ishin.
Yeah. And the other guy last year that made a really good impression on people, specifically some people pretty high up in the wrestling industry, was Hyo, because and we had this takeaway. It was really illuminating to me after not knowing how he was going to translate to America initially. You and I were sitting together at the Dragon Gate USA Game Changer show last year, and watching Hyo do that spot that he does every match, just that up and over into the handsprings across the ring. Watching that in the context of him sharing the ring with Jimmy Lloyd and having watched Game Changer talent earlier in the day, that was the moment where I was like, oh, Hyo is so much better than every American indie wrestler, and it is so glaringly obvious in this environment. So Hyo blew a lot of people away as well, and I will be very, very vague because I don't want to blow anybody's spot here, but I was talking to somebody about the possibility of a match that Hyo would be involved with that I think will be pretty cool if it ends up happening. And I think it'll be a good showcase for Hyo in that match. So I'm hoping that ends up coming to fruition. But there's people booking Dragon Gate names that are excited about Dragon Gate this year, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm glad to see it versus what happened last year. So that is really kind of nice to see. Anything
I'm bummed, I got to say, because we haven't talked a lot about WrestleMania weekend yet. I mean, there's... there's what, 10 Dragon Gate names coming over, and I'm a little bummed that we're only going to get the one show at the Game Changer building, and that it doesn't look like we're going to get a second joint show like we did with Pro Wrestling Revolution and Dragon Gate last year. And I don't know if Pro Wrestling Revolution would be the answer, but I think they're going to be sprinkled throughout Mania weekend, which is fine, but I would like to see one more. If they're going to come over, it would be nice to have two full force Dragon Gate USA shows, or the full force Dragon Gate USA show and then some sort of joint show. And it doesn't look like we're going to get that this year, which is a bummer because they have a lot of names coming over.
Yeah, I wonder with how things kind of fell apart with some parts of that one venue and the promotions that were involved, that maybe the energy that could have been if certain promotions were still in business, maybe that might have provided the opportunity for the PWR kind of thing.
Yeah, but even with Prestige and Deadlock going away, you know, New Texas Pro is using Ishin and Dragon Kid and maybe some others, but I know at least those two, and they're very into it. So that feels true. Like that building, that collective should have some sort of all-star show on Friday night that they're not having, which is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, no, that is a little bit of a bummer. Was there anything else on Wakayama you wanted to touch on before we moved on and get back to Gorkin?
No, that Triangle Gate match was really good. Everybody should go watch it.
Yeah, elsewhere on the Corkin, the thing when you have what we had on today's show, where essentially those three matches take up so much of it, that does not leave us with that much other things on the show. We did get the return of Luis Monte after his well-deserved and long-awaited vacation, and the foreign ace got his first check-in on the newest foreigner in Dragon Gate, Marcus Mathers. It was a Super Tigre out of the 450 splash that Mathers saw that Monte was getting out of the way. He rolled through, but that allowed Monte to get in position to do the rebound Super Tigre Rana Hole to get the win in a interesting kind of match that I felt like it really made me appreciate like Monte's like last few years and how he kind of progressed, and see him kind of be the captain in a match like this. You know, I thought it was interesting.
You know, I don't understand really what's going on with the ID program, and I don't know what Mathers' future is, and I don't know how long he's going to be in Japan, but I'm really happy with how quickly he's assimilated himself, and I thought he looked very comfortable in the multi-man match in Wakayama, and I thought for this sort of match, singles match, Cork and Hall, you know, it wasn't a match that lit the world on fire by any means, but I thought he looked very competent, and if you compare him to where Monte was during his first tour, you know, the level of comfort that Mathers has compared to him, or compared to Bendito or Kakui, some of these other guys, Mathers is a guy that looks at home on this roster, that looks like he could hang, and that's after 3 weeks in Japan. I would imagine that if he stays, you know, I think he's going home at the beginning of March, which is a bummer. I'd really like to see him stay longer, but if this is a guy that comes back, I mean, he can hang in this promotion. I have really liked his output so far.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he at least sticks through the first week of March so he gets another Corkin spot. The thing about Mathers that I think he has like kind of tapped into, because at least that what we saw this week, the spot of his that I think it has kind of surprise the audience, but it is something he should definitely keep on going with and finding spots for. It his hook kick counter.
Oh my god, that got me off the couch. That was excellent.
Yeah, it looked great in Wakayama. It looked great against Monte. And you know, the other aspect that I think made this work so well with this is that Mathers, like, he is kind of a lanky guy, and I think with Monte, when he's not being the world's best base and catcher, when he gets to like wrestle more, not even heavyweights, but people more of his size, it feels like that Monte is able to fly around a little bit more. He feels a little bit more comfortable doing that, and I like being able to see that in this. And the way it kind of went into that closing stretch, like, it's a shame that we had the three finishes right after that, because I thought that this was a really smart kind of cute way to go, like, oh, Monte scouted this guy a little bit. He saw this coming and knew that this was the right opportunity to get the flash pin. And I thought that that was really smart. I was 3.25 on just a good 10-minute TV match.
what do we do with Monte going forward? I think you and I both would, I would even accept some plot loopholes and some lack of logic to get him into Sypatra, but what are we doing with him? I'm stunned that he came back and wasn't immediately put in an angle to get him back in a unit.
Yeah, no, if like Shun has like a mind control mask and something or like this, yeah.
I would accept, hey, we need a partner. Oh, here's Luis Monte. And I wouldn't ask any questions just to get him in a unit. It could be, so I would look past so much just to have Monte back on the battlefield.
Yeah, because I don't want him to basically be doing these kind of matches throughout the year until like Flamita shows up. And then you pull Flamita away from Natural Hives when this is an interesting time for Flamita to come back into Natural Hives with the new members and have to do Team Mexico stuff. Like, he needs a permanent place. You're absolutely
but
right.
And I'm at a point now where we did the Team Mexico stuff last year, but if Flamita comes back, I want to see him with Vibes. I don't want to see him right with Monte. You know, I want Monte to be in his own unit, and I don't know if that's just, okay, Yoshioka wins the Dreamgate belt, Tanaka's Bravegate champion, Dragon Daya, here's your new tag team partner. We're going to put Monte and D-Courage, which that's fine. I mean, you know, Daya and Monte versus Rita and Kame. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds fucking awesome. But he hasn't been in a unit since November of 2024. And while I do think the Team Mexico stuff as a concept and as in execution really over-delivered last year, I mean, by the end of the year, that was some of my favorite stuff in Dragon Gate last year for what was, you know, sort of a throwaway gimmick. I thought it ended up really working just because the matches were so good, but this is a guy who's a former Dreamgate champion, and he won't ever be Dreamgate champion again, but to just have this sort of hamster wheel going with him, I can't believe it. I said last month, I said when he comes back, he's going to be put in an angle immediately, and I thought maybe when they were setting up the All Out War match that it was going to lead to Monte coming out, and then it didn't. Instead, I saw Masa Kitamiya, and I'm stunned by it. So I guess the answer is I don't think Paradox needs another guy. I mean, you could put him in Paradox. I think that'd be weird, but you could do it. Or, hey, Yoshioka's going to be busy. Tanaka's busy. Dragon Daya, here's your new tag team partner.
Yeah, because we can't have him outside and just kind of, because if he's outside, then he's essentially going to be teaming with Ultimo against people. And that's just such a waste of the guy.
Yeah, he's just better than that. I don't want him in that role. And when you look at the unaffiliated guys on this roster, you know, Mochi, Fuji, Genki, Kanda, Yoshida, Punch, Fuda, Kimura are essentially your relevant guys with that. I mean, there's no unit to be had there. Even if you want to fast track another young boy, there's nothing there that says, oh, Monte should be leading this unit. They've sort of maxed out their guys right now. And I don't see, I mean, the problem is like, okay, if you reshuffle D-Courage, that doesn't really get you anywhere. Then you've got to break up another unit to also break up D-Courage. I don't think that helps. I think you just stick Monte there and ride it out for a while.
Yeah,
because Vibes aren't going anywhere. If Love and Peace goes somewhere, I'll have a real fucking issue with this promotion. And so you're sort of, I mean, again, I think putting him in Sypatra alleviates a lot of the pressure and the confusion of that unit, but I don't know if it makes sense in storyline. I think putting him in D-Courage is probably the best fit. And I guess you could put him in Love and Peace, but then you're putting him back with Kame and Hyo. And I'm hell bent on not touching Love and Peace. Just let that unit exist as is.
Yeah. And I feel like you could solve these issues without breaking up your big super face unit at this point. That still is not even at their 1 year anniversary.
It's really odd. He is in such an odd position in this promotion right now. And I thought they would really go out of their way to fix it when he came back, and they did not. And that only makes it weirder.
No, I'm with you on it. But a good performance. Good to have him back. And Mathers still, like, as you said, like, I'm still really impressed with how well he has integrated himself in onto this roster. The thing that I I know that since it's only a 6-week tour and not a 6-month tour, I'm at the point with him where I'm ready to be like, okay, when's the next time he's going to be back? Because I'm ready to see like what changes happen with him, because like the whole WWE ID thing. And I feel bad that I ruined him for Rich Craich at that GCW show, just because the hard cam things that were so kind of obvious on that, but hasn't been a thing here. But I want to see how he progresses. I mean, he's still 22, and the fact
I can't
that
believe he's that young. He does not carry himself like a 22-year-old.
And it's something that like he's been like a name that at least I've been aware of for like 3 or 4 years at this point. I'm like, I was aware of him when he was 18.
Yeah,
man, really? He had that match against Dragon Kid at the ETU show when he was 20.
Yeah, that's right. That was definitely the weekend that I realized I had to start paying attention to him. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it seemed like, you know, before the tour that it was building up to a Brave Gate match with Tanaka, and it doesn't necessarily seem like that's the direction they're going to go now.
I think he's just physically too tall to be a believable Brave Gate wrestler. So they upped his weight.
I still, you know, we got a glimpse of it in Wakayama, but I'm hoping either on that Kobe show or on that Kyoto show. I mean, who knows? Because it's D Courage and it's Gaja Dokuro, and maybe they just won't wrestle on those shows, and we'll have an even colder Dreamgate match by the time we get to Fukuoka. But I'm hoping on one of those shows we get a big 8-man main event where Mathers gets a lot of time in the ring with Kakuta or Shimizu or Ishin or even Minoru. I'd like to see him in the ring with Minoru and just really let loose and see what he can do in that big Dragon Gate multi-man environment, because he's been doing that on the house shows, but we haven't seen any of those. So I'm hoping Kobe or Kyoto, we get a big feature presentation of Marcus Mathers in a Dragon Gate multi-man match.
No, I'm with you with that. The first two matches on the show, we can kind of get through kind of quickly. Paradox, Yamato, Dragon Kid, Susumu, and Hulk versus Ultimo, and the All Asia Tag Team Champions, Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, along with Punch Tominaga. It was a pretty punch-based match, well-executed in towards the close. It was a dragon suplex hold by Mochizuki, suddenly gaining the win on BB Hulk. It is like a situation of the promotion where like I would rather Paradox not be kind of in the situation where you're in a match with Ultimo and Punch Tominaga in Tokyo, and you kind of know what it's going to be here. But at least for what it was for me, it was as good as one could hope for a match with that much Punch Tominaga focus.
It was very long for a match number two, but the opener was also very long.
Yeah, match number two, 11 minutes and 31 seconds. To remind everyone, the first Saipatra versus Gacha Dokuro match, 5 minutes, 49 seconds. The match with Kakuta and Yoshioka was 11 minutes and 11 seconds. And then the Skywalker match was 6 minutes. This, again, 11 minutes and 31 seconds, Case. This was the second longest thing on the show.
And I did not think this ever really kicked into a gear that I found to be interesting.
No. The opener was interesting just for the fact that we got my main man, Kenichiro Rai, back in the building. Ryofuda injured once again, pulled from the show. Kenichiro Rai making the appearance. He's teaming with Kazuma Kimura against Naruki Doi and Kagetora. Kagetora wins with the Gura Makakari on Kimura. Kimura's still really good in the undercard. Him and Doi are a lot of fun together.
I know. I'm very confused on what they're doing with him, because I think Kimura is better than this. I think he's better than this position. I would like to see them do something with him, but it took 2 years for Aki and 3 years for Gucci. So maybe in 2027 something will come Kimura's way.
Yeah, I really would have hoped that 6 months in for Kimura, because it is like now, because he came in September, right? So yeah, no, October, oh no, August. He came in August. So yeah, 6 months. And 6 months in, doing match one work, teaming with a guy who's never brought into the company anymore. Not super fun. Still great to see Arakan, who looks the exact same as he did in 1999.
Got his theme music on this show. I don't know the last time I heard Arakan's theme music.
It's a real vibe, you know?
Look, I'm sure he has a phenomenal record collection. I don't doubt that at all.
I imagine his 33s that he has. Like he has.
Yeah, he's a 7-inch guy. That's he's a 7-inch single guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he just has... I'm trying to think what would be like the kind of box, because you're not going to use like a full milk crate with 7 inches, right? You're going to have to use something different.
He's almost got like the white baseball cardboard boxes for the just the boxes and boxes of base cards. He's got something. It's just, you go to the Arkans, you know, drug den, I'm sure, and it's just you're pulling out sleeves of 7 inches.
Yeah, and it's a lot of pulp. He has a lot of Jarvis Cocker.
That's not the direction I would have gone, but I love where your head's at.
I just like the idea that maybe he's into Britpop.
Pulp is a very horny band. I don't look at Arkin like that. I think he's got like Sepultura records.
Oh wow. So we're going complete opposite direction then.
Yeah,
Death 7 inches.
Dave Sapolsky are probably hanging out listening to Neurosis.
God, I don't know what it is that have a Pavlov response that whenever I hear of Neurosis now, even as someone who is more of a metalhead, I immediately think of Dave Sapolsky.
It's the funniest. That's like, it's all
it's his
I
favorite
think of
band
with that
of all time.
Like, and like,
traded.
They're like, they're fucking horrible. It's just
I like sludge metal. I do. I think High on Fire is one of my favorite. And Matt Pike are some of the most talented musicians working today. I guess Neurosis is more crust than sludge, but
ugh.
I remember that I was at a festival that had a Neurosis on top, and I was like, no, let's go home after Mastodon. We don't need to stay around for that.
Yeah, I'm just not attending that festival. That's just a bad time. If that's your 1-2, I'm staying home.
3 was Sanaj and Boris.
Yeah, no, not gonna work for me, brother. That's not that's not getting me there.
It's a good thing that we have Dragon Gate as a commonality case, you know?
If it's not like a thrash band, like I really like, you know, Peak Pantera. I really Obituary. There's a newer thrash band called Fugitive that I think are really good, but if you veer off that path and it's metal, I am not interested.
I am not going to send you what my most played records were, because it was a lot of The Sword from last year.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that. It's just it's
all time
never...
worst musician voice, by the way, is the lead singer of The Sword, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
Like, yeah, just like weirdly like twangy in a way, because he's from Austin. But like, it's like in a way that you expect him to be like in a psychobilly band, but instead he's talking about space combat and shit like that.
That's the thing. I can just never.
The lyrics are so nerdy. Like
I'm not into ghouls or goblins or things like that. And I'm not into space. And so I just can't do it. I really can't do it.
Nah, don't blame you on that. Anything else you want to touch on before we get out of here, before I go list albums that I love that you absolutely abhor?
No, I'm just so glad that I'm not the only human on the planet that thinks of Gabe Sapolsky when they hear Neurosis. It's just, it's nice to know that I'm not the only one. It's really comforting.
How can't you? I mean, if he had it his way, all of the Johnny Gargano, I Think I Can Do This videos would be like just track to Souls at the Zero instead of just whatever production music he found.
I know. But I have the same thing with Morrissey. When Morrissey dies, I'm going to get a million texts about it. I would like to think that Morrissey's a little bit better than Neurosis. But when the singer of Neurosis dies, the first person I'm thinking of is going to be Gabe Sapolsky. It's just very funny that that's the life that I live.
Case, we don't text. I promise you, when Morrissey dies, I'll send you a text check-in on you.
Oh, God. It's like a weird... I've thought about this
before.
Me and
Lanza are going to check in on you.
Lanza doesn't know who Morrissey is, but...
I think Lanza might know who Morrissey is.
No, Lanza likes all the 90s alt-rock stuff that I don't like, but... I've thought of that. When Morrissey dies, the people that I haven't spoken to in years that I will probably hear from will be very funny to me. It's just for a lot of people, I am their sole connection to that guy. And for all of his faults, and there are many, still, you know, ride or die Morrissey t-shirt on at least once a week. So it's it'll be a very impactful death when it happens.
No, I get that. I mean, David Lynch was that for me. So I totally understand where you're coming from. But Case, I'm just glad to have you back and that we're back talking about Dragon Gate this week. I don't have anything else for us. The only thing that we have announced for the Kobe show this weekend is the Open the Brave Gate number one contendership between Kagetora and Genki Horiguchi. Winner gets champion Ryoya Tanaka at Unos Dos Tres Dragon Gate Dragon Festival on the 23rd. Anything you wanted to hit on before we're out of here, buddy?
The plan as of right now, episode regularly scheduled, usual time next week. We'll do a Kobe review, and then we'll figure out something else because that'll probably be a pretty short review. And then the week after that, we will do an Uno Dos Tres preview. And the plan as of right now is 2 weeks from now to do a new episode of those days as well. So keep that on your calendar. We promise you we will get you one by the end of February. It's looking like 2 weeks from now we'll hit record on that.
Yeah, and it's Fukumen Mass League time when we get to that. So get yourselves ready for that. You can follow us on social media, both Twitter and Blue Sky, at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at underscore in your case on Twitter. You can follow me at Fuchihei on Twitter. If you want to step into the conversation, join the Voices of Wrestling Discord. The big topic today, naturally, is the new looks for Aki and Gyuchi. And I really have enjoyed the channel over the last few weeks. That's the Dragon Gate channel, Korakins. It's always buzzing throughout a live show. The first place I heard about National Treasure Himeji Castle being saved by Ryoto Mochizuki was in the Voices of Wrestling Discord in that Dragon Gate channel, but also the Open the Voice Gate channel. That's where we post our show match listings for those days, as well as their scheduling things. Usually it's fast for me just to fire something off in Discord for that, as well as we have a pinned post that has all of our historical Dragon Gate content along with everything else, including the Dragon Gate USA series. I think but by the end of this year, we're probably going to have over 100 just kind of evergreen episodes when you include those days, aren't we?
I would think so.
So, but that's at the Voices of Wrestling Discord, and we will be back with you next week talking to you about Kobe and talking to you about those days in 2 weeks. Take care, everyone. Bye.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? And are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.